This is called For What Binds Us.
There are names for what binds us, strong forces, weak forces. Look around, you can see them. The skin that forms in a half-empty cup, nails rusting into the places they join, joints dovetailed on their own weight. The way things stay so solidly wherever they've been set down, and gravity, scientists say, is weak. And see how the flesh grows back across a wound with a great vehemence more strong than the simple, untested surface before. There's a name for it on horses when it comes back darker and raised, proud flesh. As all flesh is proud of its wounds, wears them as honors given out after battle, small triumphs pinned to the chest. And when two people have loved each other, see how it is like a scar between their bodies, stronger, darker, and proud. How the black cord makes of them a single fabric that nothing can tear or mend.
So, this week we learned, among other things, because we learned a lot this week, that Jesus might have been married. My favorite cartoon that I saw had him walking out of the house with an annoyed look on his face, and a voice was bubbling out of the window of the house behind him saying, "Don't forget the pint of milk on your way home." And with this papyrus discovery challenging the orthodoxy about who we think Jesus was, it's a good time, I think, to challenge the orthodoxy about who we think we are as religious people. So if you find yourself feeling a little bit uncomfortable this morning, please know, as a colleague of mine said, it is entirely intentional. And that is because we are toughest on those we love, and we grow most when we're challenged. And as a way to get at the orthodoxy I speak of, go back with me, as I often do in my sermons, to my memory banks. And the year is 2000, and it is autumn like this. The month actually is October. And we are back in St. Louis to see my family, bringing in tow with us our beautiful new baby boy in those very heavy carriers. Born that July. We wanted to show him off. We wanted to get some sleep and hand him to the grandparents. And we were there to bless him and dedicate him in my home church, the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis, an esteemed place, friends. Now, Earl Holt, one of the ministers at the time, who's now retired, who gave actually my installation sermon here and upset a bunch of people because he preached exclusively from the Bible. Earl thought it'd be great if I gave the sermon. I mean, why not? At that point, I had not quite 2 years of school, seminary, under my belt. I had never given a sermon to actual people before. And I hadn't slept in 3 months. So it seemed like a good idea. "Why not preach, Nathan?" said Earl. "Well, I can think of 1,000 reasons why not. But okay, Earl, sign me up." And so I did, and that morning, you know, I knotted my tie in the mirror like 3 times, because I still did not tie a tie correctly. And I obsessively read and reread and reread my manuscript over my bowl of Wheat Chex, and I dropped milk on the title, and I smudged it. And I tried on the much too short robe that I had borrowed from Earl. Yours is white, but my first one didn't go barely below my kneecaps. As Earl was short, and I'm not. And on the way to church that morning, we passed by the front yards of my childhood. And because the year is 2000 and it is October, what do we see in the front yards of nearly every home? Anyone guess? political signs. Cardinals, not that year. Political signs. Bush, Cheney, big one, W. And occasionally we would see Gore, but only occasionally. Remember, this is the Midwest. And we all learned we had to split our country into colors soon after that. We are in red state country. So we pull into the parking lot. And from the corner of my eye, I see a familiar-looking Ford Explorer, cherry red and shining. "Hey, Mom," I say, that kind of looks like Uncle Denny's car. Uncle Denny, the faithful Catholic, the ardent Republican, the man Karen and I feel especially bound to because of the time that he dropped everything in his life and drove that same Ford Explorer, red and shining, all the way from St. Louis to Boston to our Dorchester condo and helped us put in a kitchen there and a bathroom and lent us the money for that condo because we did not have a penny and a baby was on the way no matter what. As the poet says, as Alan read for us, there are names for what binds us in this world, strong forces and weak forces. And there was a bond, there was really a strong bond between Denny and me. "Hey, Mom, you know, that looks just like Uncle Denny's car. I thought we agreed to invite family after the sermon to the dedication." "I'm stressed out enough." "Oh," she says, "I might have invited just a few of them." "They love you. They want to hear you." And now I'm remembering back to the soccer fields of my childhood when my relatives would stand on the sidelines and they would cheer me on. Only this time, today, they will do it from the pews. And there is a sound for what this feels like. And that sound is, "Oh." Worship begins. Organ pipes up. The hymn books are open. And the ministers process in, because in this church we would process in from the back and then come up front. And once I'm up front, I can see the extended family, my family, all of them Catholic, giving nods of approval to each other that seem to say, "Well, it seems like a church." It seems like it. I mean, never mind there's no crucifix behind hanging in the rafters, or that this church is known as one of the city's quote-unquote liberal safe houses. It's what it's called. And I learned later this is the first time that my family have been in church for worship that was not a Catholic service. They've been to funerals and weddings, but the first time they had never been to worship that was not Catholic. And I scanned the pews. Aunts and other uncles and cousins and grandparents. They filled up like the whole center portion of the church. But where is Denny? My mom invited everyone. There's a sound for what this feels like. Ugh. But again, where is Denny? I don't see him. Did he decide in the end that he just couldn't come inside? He didn't feel comfortable. Did he maybe see the two men that were holding hands on the way in? This would have been way outside him feeling comfortable to see that. First verse of the hymn and second verse, we're up front now, Earl and me. Third verse, and I'm up front in my short robe. I don't know the hymn, so I'm mouthing the words. I do that sometimes. And then from the back, I see him come in. Maybe he'd been in the bathroom. And he's scanning the pews for the family. And as the fourth verse concludes, he sees them and he begins to walk forward up the stone aisle and the click, click of the shoes. And as he does, as he walks forward, everything and everyone in the sanctuary grows quiet and they sit down. So he's conspicuous. He's very noticeable. And from the perch in the front, I can see that he has a W button on his lapel. Oh. And then, like he has done every time in his life when he has walked into a church, he stops before he enters the pew. And for those of you who grew up Catholic, you will know what he did next. He gracefully genuflects toward me. And he makes the sign of the cross. Oh. Now later, we would all laugh like you were laughing. But I have to tell you that I always laughed a little less. Even today. Now why would that be? Because from my perch up front, I saw what no one else saw that morning. No one else could see it. I saw the faces of the people in the pews that I really liked. I saw them turned towards Denny and then back again to their neighbor, and they rolled their eyes and they smirked and they murmured, and even some of their fingers pointed at him. And to me and to Denny, the message felt very clear. The congregation that had so welcomed me and so nurtured me was saying to my uncle I loved with his W button and his assumed non-liberal ways, "You, sir, well, maybe you are actually not that welcome here." Now, thinking back, I think this was the first time that my Unitarian Universalist faith matured, because it was the first time that our faith hurt me and one of our congregations hurt me. The poet reminds us that there is a name for the flesh that grows back across our hurts, but it is stronger. It is called proud flesh. Now, every political season, and I've been with you for several now, I feel this proud flesh of mine being tested. It is stretched. And this is because I feel now more than any other time the pull on the skin between, on the one hand, over here, our being proudly open as a people and proudly diverse that strives to welcome every person that comes into the door. That's over here. And then on the other side, the liberal religious values and causes that lead us to sometimes believe we should all, you know, vote a certain way. And that flesh gets stretched this time of year. I know you feel it. I feel it. Said a fellow Unitarian Universalist to me the other night at a party I was at, someone who attends another congregation, "You know, Nathan, do you have any Republicans that are hiding in the closet in your congregation?" And, you know, we laughed. But honestly, the question made me wince inside, because I know for a fact that we do. And for all our talk of openness and diversity, and here comes the uncomfortable part, you and I can be intolerant, politically intolerant people. We can be smug and sarcastic, and we can murmur. And I put myself, my friends, first in line. Last Sunday, I was driving home from church. We heard Robin tell us in her message the good news that our children hear that we love people beyond belief, that we love them beyond belief, we say. And I saw the signs in the front yards on my way home of the other party. And I caught myself making all kinds of assumptions and judgments about them. Does this ever happen to you? It does, because there are forces that bind us. And one of them is how quick you and I move from vehemently disagreeing with someone's ideas. "Uncle Denny, how can you think like that? Uncle Denny, really?" To discounting them as people. Or in other words, You, sir, maybe you are not that welcome here. Luckily, and this is such a blessed thing, this faith of ours, which we sometimes hear, asks nothing of us. This faith asks us to be better than we would otherwise be in life. So this is when I tell us about the phone call. These are not rare. The phone call from a guy named Max on Thursday morning after our staff meeting. This is Nathan, I say, picking up the phone. Hi, Father. My name is Max, and I'm calling for my friend. I'm not religious myself, he says, but she is a good, strong Christian. She believes in Jesus. She believes in the Bible. And before I even have time to stop myself, I've noticed I've already labeled this person a certain way. I've labeled her a conservative Christian. These phrases, believe in Jesus, believe in the Bible, these are like signs on the front yard that sometimes tell us what to think, how to judge, what to assume. And I wonder, why is he calling me, the quote-unquote liberal Unitarian Universalist minister, why is he calling me? Well, my friend, he says, is really sick, and I'm just calling around to ask how I can find someone to give her the sacrament of the sick before she dies. Do you, Universalist Unitarians, or whatever your name is, do you do that? And we go on to talk about what he is looking for, how he literally has before him the phone book open, and he is calling churches from Ashland to Sherburn, looking for some advice, and how I am the first clergy person who happened to be in their office to pick up the phone. You know, it's funny. I don't know if you look at a phone book recently. Looked up religion in a phone book. But they don't break things down for us like the rest of the world. They don't, for example, say liberal folks who drive Priuses and vote Democrat are especially welcome here. They don't say that. They don't say 4 out of Republicans recommend this one. They don't say for red people. They don't say for blue people. Do you know what they say? They say houses of faith. Houses of faith. And it leaves it up to us to find our way home. And friends, when you're trying to decide who will bless your friend before she dies, well, the forces that bind us become a little more clear, don't they? Now, later this afternoon, after worship and coffee hour and a meeting, I am scheduled to call Max, as promised, to see if he still needs me. He said he really did want a priest after all, if he could find one. And after I pointed him to the ones that I knew, I said to him, I will stand in for their place if you still need me. I will stand in, Max. Because without intending to, he reminded me that if we Unitarian Universalists want to be a religion for our time, which is what we say we do, if we want to be people, the people we say we want to be, who love people beyond belief, you and I are going to have to get a whole lot better at being in community with people who do not think like us. Because friends, and here comes the sermon title, and please don't tell headquarters, don't tell Jenny next week. I don't think being liberal is enough. And this is because the signs are flying out front, the partisans are winning, and at least one of our politicians is telling us that 47% of us may not be worth the time. And in this climate, what I need, and I know what you need, is not another place that knows how to appeal to its base and is inclined to say in light murmurs and rolled eyes, well, you, and maybe you, you're not so welcome here. Instead, as religious people, we are called to lead our lives with different kinds of questions other than who belongs. We might ask on our way to the finish here, what would it be like this year to spend a year thinking of all of us as members of the human race? What would that look like in your life this year? Instead, we might ask, what would it mean for you to not label someone as Republican or Democrat based on the sign you see out front of their yard as conservative or liberal? What would it be like for you to let those assumptions go just for a morning? Forget trying it for a year. Just try one morning. Instead, we might ask, how can we expect the world to heal if we can't also heal the wounds that we might have caused? If we can't say to Denny, all the Dennys in our congregations, if we have, my friends, any of them left, you know, I'm sorry. Can we begin again in love, as our choir sang for us? And instead we ask, can we get a witness, as the old-time preachers said? Can I get a witness? Can I get a witness for the ways that my colleague Rebecca Parker, who told us months ago at our General Assembly, that coming up with brilliant answers to the question, what is this church like? What is this about? That will not save us, she said. I want to get a witness for what she told us, that what will save us is how well we show what we love in the world. Because what we love, she said, is so much more important than what we think. And we might ask here at the end, well, what do we love? And we answer among so many things in this church. Well, we say we love diversity. We say we love pluralism. But for that love to flourish, this much is very clear to us. We will have to learn to live with the consequences that diversity brings, which means welcoming people who may not just look different than us, but also think different and believe different and vote different and talk about God different and talk about Jesus different and want to do church different. For me, it will mean that I check my assumptions and my judgments when people like Max call in looking to bless their friend before she dies. And along the way, you and I will mess up and we will flail and we will fail and we will even hurt each other, maybe even very often. And then, you know, if we're lucky, we'll see how the flesh grows back across the wounds that we cause to each other, more simple than the untested flesh before. There's a word for that flesh in this space that is called proud flesh. Proud how we've grown. Proud how we've changed. And so we may be proud of the ways this faith makes us better than we are, because we are bound together, and we are bound together, and we are bound together in so many ways. Let us say amen and rise as we can in body or spirit for our closing hymn 318, We Would Be One.